You paid into Medicare for decades. Don't spend retirement limping. The Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. It's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000.
Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wing Trust Business Lunch on this Tuesday afternoon. If it's Tuesday, that means Sean Najarian talks stocks, and we'll check in with him in just a couple of minutes. Suzanne Muchin will be along a little bit later. She's the co-host of The Big Payoff, and I think we can't help but talk a little bit about what President Obama said about Donald Trump today in relation to the Khan family. Is that a women's issue? Is that a religious issue? Suzanne will be here to talk about that a little bit later, and about the conventions in general. As we said, Rusty Sproat from FIGO Pet Insurance comes by, and Andrew Herman as well from DNA Info Chicago, talking about, I think, what will be the third tallest building work underway now on Wacker Drive. But we'll start on Wall Street. The Dow Jones Industrial Average down about 145 points this afternoon. John Najarian joins us now to talk all about it. John, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you very much. Great to be back with you, Stephen.
So the day started with numbers about consumer spending, right, up 0.4 points in June, maybe a little better than expected, but it looks as if we're spending our savings, right? Our salary, our pay isn't going up to keep pace with spending.
That is correct. What we're seeing, Stephen, is that consumers, of course, that was a horrible GDP number last week, end of last week, the gross domestic product. It was just no two ways about it, pretty dismal. And the consumer, however, the spending by consumers was up, I believe, over 4%. So it only makes sense that if you've got consumers spending more, that their savings rate is going to drop, which indeed it did. And I think that's the takeaway from today's numbers, is that, as always, the consumer being 70% of the economy, if they are spending, even when business isn't, they can buoy the economy. But obviously, consumer confidence can be impacted by other things going on in the world, and business confidence must be pretty low for them to be spending as little as they're spending.
I know you spend a lot of your time at CNBC. Peter Oppenheimer from Goldman Sachs was there today talking about the fact that maybe equities are due for a 10% drop, overvalued, or what do you make of that?
Well, there's certainly a class of us, people that are in the markets all the time, that think that there's the primary driver has been extremely low interest rates around the world. So at any point, could we get a correction? Of course, and we have. We've had corrections almost to that 10% level we did last August, and we almost did again in February of this year. We get right down to about that level, and then it seems where the money that had been on the sidelines comes back in. So I won't be surprised if that happens. But as far as for us to see a sustained sell-off, Stephen, I don't really see it just yet, because I haven't seen the froth in the market that you normally see when we're at a long-term high.
You know, one of the things I have watched, and you know it much better than me, but these companies that engage in share buybacks to help their share price, and I think there were $163 billion in buybacks in the first quarter. Again, these are numbers from Goldman Sachs. They dropped significantly in the second quarter, but they say that so far investors have penalized firms that do the buybacks instead going for higher dividends. That could be good for all of us, right? Or what do you make of that?
Yeah, I'd say so.
I mean, the idea, right, is they don't spend money on their people or on research and development capital projects. Instead, they buy their stock back in order to make their stock price go higher.
And perhaps to enhance the riches of the group that owns the company, that owns right. most of the company, and or the leadership of the company. I am probably in the same school that you are, that or the same camp at least, that I think that either reinvesting into your business or giving that money to perfect strangers that gave you money, that that would be the shareholders, giving them money in the form of a dividend is a better use of that capital than buying back shares of your stock. It's one area I think that I disagree with Warren Buffett. When he talked to Steve Jobs, he told him, well, if you've got this much money, Steve, you've either got to pay out a dividend or do a share buyback. Obviously, Warren Buffett doesn't do share buybacks with Berkshire Hathaway. Right. So he's giving advice on one side that he's not taking his own advice on the other. I think they don't pay a dividend, by the way, either over at Berkshire.
Did Buffett mention you? He said that you and he and Donald Trump would all release your tax returns at the same time?
Yeah, that is exactly right. Ever since we sold the balance of the firm to E-Trade, we decided, yep, we're in that same camp with Buffett. No, you and I know that's a joke. But there are some folks that would question why Mr. Trump has not released his tax returns, and some of that reason might be because of either deductions or the income not being what he kind of puffs it up to be.
He talks about a lot of money that he makes, so I can't imagine it's not true.
Well, and I don't know, because I don't know what I don't know about Mr. Trump's finances. I do know that there's an awful lot of very expensive real estate that his name, if it's not the primary owner, he's one of the owners of, and that's around the world, not just in New York. So with real estate doing what it's done, Stephen, he's probably done okay.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. We had some earnings coming out today. Also, the car makers reporting their numbers. What's jumping out at you there?
Well, the car makers, because a lot of us have been saying peak autos, not because the demand for autos is so high, but they have pulled forward the demand by basically offering really, really cheap loans because interest rates are so low that they're able to do that, and it's kept the factories open and producing cars. But the fall off over the past 2 months has been somewhat dramatic, and although General Motors has done better than most, Ford and many of the other auto manufacturers are seeing a lull, if not a cutoff of interest. And obviously the new model year is just around the corner, so they're hoping that that turns the tide there. But automakers have not had a stellar year by any means.
A little bit of time left. You got a real quick stock tip for us today. What are you buying?
I'm really doing an awful lot with the miners right now. So whether it's the GDX, which is the gold miners index of the big ones, or the GDXJ, that's the junior miners, slightly smaller capitalization stocks in the GDXJ, but they move faster. And I think that nervousness in the markets and some political turmoil here and there keeps these miners in focus. And it's been one of the best performing sectors this year, and I'm sticking with it.
John Najarian, great to talk to you. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you very much, sir.
You bet. You're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's 12:22. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. A nice Tuesday afternoon. Steve Bertrand here. Thanks very much for listening. It's time for Andrew Herman, who is an editor at DNA Info Chicago, joins us most Tuesday afternoons. Andrew, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, tell me about Gordon Food Services. Now, you tell me if I'm wrong, but I feel like when I'm driving around the city or wherever, I'm seeing these trucks that say Gordon Food Services, but no stores in the city, right? And that's about to change.
Right. They don't have any stores in the city, but they are going to open one at 6431 West Fullerton, and that's in the Belmont Cragen neighborhood. But I'd say there's about a dozen in the Chicago areas, and they basically sell kind of like bulk food. The company started off as a food wholesaler, and they still do a lot of that. But they also have retail shops now.
But they sell at the retail shops. Are they selling to guys like me, or are they selling to people who run restaurants?
Well, if you need 10 pounds of chicken wings, they're yeah. selling to you. But it's for both. But they do a lot of supplies to restaurants. But, people like to buy in bulk these days with the whole Costco sort of thing. And this is another option for people.
But it is the sort of food, if you're buying it there, I guess that what I'm getting at is predominantly they are a restaurant supplier.
Right. That is the bulk of their business. But the whole retail to individuals has grown to the point where they now have 170 stores, mostly in the Midwest.
And I like the idea that their company seemed to be driven by a pretty strong philosophy.
Yeah, it's a very interesting company. It started, it's based in Michigan, in Wyoming, Michigan. And it was started in 1897 by some Dutch immigrants, and they delivered butter and eggs by horse-drawn carriage. But then they moved to servicing restaurants and commercial and wholesale and that kind of thing, and then started opening these stores in the early 80s. And today they are a $12.6 billion business with 17,000 employees, but they're kind of unusual in that they're a privately held company. But they also say that they're built on biblical principles.
So an eye for an eye?
They see themselves as stewards. And it's interesting, you know, corporations, big companies, when you're publicly traded, you release an annual report so everyone can look and see what's going on. Well, they released something called their annual stewardship report, and they sort of judge themselves on how well they're doing in terms of these biblical principles. So one of them might be like taking care of the business because the effort, the idea is that they want to pass the business on to the next generation of family members. They're very much into the environment. And are we using less? Are we using more? How are we impacting the environment? They have very strong business ethics, and they sort of examine how they did for the year. It's a very interesting place.
I did not know that about them. And it'll be nice for Belmont Cragin, right? Because I know that they're very involved in the neighborhoods they move into.
Right. They do a lot of charity work. They do a lot of wholesale food to nonprofits. So they're a very interesting company, I think.
Andrew, if I was in the market for $1 million, 1,000-square-foot condominium, where would I go?
I'll tell you where I'd go. I'd go to the Vista Tower at 381 East Wacker, which is broke ground this week, and it's just east of Michigan there, and it is going to be the third largest building in Chicago. So our skyline is getting ready for a dramatic change.
So it'll be number three behind what, Willis Tower and Trump Tower?
Right, right, and a little ahead of Aon.
406 luxury condominiums and a hotel as well. Really, though, 1,000-square-foot condo for $1 million. I think my first apartment was maybe 650, 700 square feet.
Look,
imagine. What's that?
If you have more money, you know, they top out at $17 million, so you don't have to live in the shoebox for $1 million. If you just double it or triple it, you could probably get a little bit bigger place.
And just think of that, though, spending that much money on the shoebox. It will be the tallest world building designed by a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a statistic? Or have we moved beyond that, or is that something we still care about?
Well, I think Gene Gang of the Gang Studio is a very hot architect these days, and she is in the minority. If you go into an architectural firm, you see primarily men, so I think it's significant. And, she's doing all kinds of great work here in Chicago. The Aqua building is not too far from there, and like the Aqua building, this new one, this Vista Tower, has this sort of undulating look to it. It's they have these geometric figures sort of built into the sides of the building, and if you move around, it looks like the building is kind of moving. So it's really a cool place.
Cool building. Andrew Herman from DNA Info Chicago. You can read more at dnainfo.com/Chicago. Good talk to you, and friend.
Okay.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. You're all I've ever wanted of a girl.
My own theme song, that was just too much for me.
Suzanne Mushin is in the studio, the co-host of The Big Payoff here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, and I just don't know where to go from there. Suzanne, welcome back to the program.
No, Steve, you welcome back, buddy.
Yeah, you should welcome me. Thank you very much for filling in. I heard you did a great job, and I really appreciate it.
I did okay, but I think I got some notes from people who missed hearing us fight.
Well, here's the first thing. We have got to take the Huffington Post away from you. The material you bring in to the program, and you know, I like the Huffington Post. I like Arianna Huffington a lot, but some of these things you bring in make no sense to me. For example, you wanted to talk today about an article about how it's easier, that we're more likely to forgive men than we are women, or this has to do with the Bill Clinton convention speech. You got to sort that out for me.
I'm happy to, but I can already hear that edge in your voice, man. You're angry.
I'm not angry. It's just, it's wrong.
It's wrong. Okay, well, let's break this down then, my friend.
Okay.
So there was a lot of positive feelings about Bill Clinton's speech at the Democratic National Convention. People really felt like it changed the narrative and gave people a different picture about Hillary, and that was the upside. But what also occurred, or more importantly, perhaps what didn't occur, was any mention of his impropriety. And there was one word that was right in the middle of the speech that glossed over it, where he referred to them being through heartbreak together.
Okay, right.
And so the point here is people just moved on from that speech. No one actually came forward and said, well, oh my God, I mean, Bill Clinton was this terrible person and he did all these terrible things. They allowed him to get away with that speech simply by inserting the word heartbreak. That would never, ever occur if the situation gender-wise was reversed. You know that.
So what would you have had him say, though? I mean, he first of all, he acknowledged that he, you know, cheated on his wife by saying the heartbreak, which...
No, the word heartbreak doesn't exactly sum up cheating on your wife.
Okay, but we all know what it refers to, and this is a speech where, you know, he doesn't want to bring all that stuff up because that's going to hurt her in the election. So I'm not sure what the expectation would be for him, what he should have said.
I don't know that it's so much, Steve, about what he should have said or could have said. It's more about the public's response to him. He is still adored. He still has fans.
He's also still loathed. I mean, he's adored by many, but a lot of people still can't stand the sight of him.
That's, I know, true. But I'm saying when people can't stand the sight of him, they can't stand all sorts of things about him. But the truth is that so much more venom. I mean, have we ever actually had a woman in public office who got away with and could stand up and give a speech like that where she glossed over some glaring part of her life and not have people hate? I mean, Hillary's the perfect example. People hate her in part because they feel like she's glossed over really important pieces of her life.
Yeah,
I think men are more easily forgiven.
Okay. I think a lot of people who hate her also hate her husband. I hate that.
Yeah.
I don't like that word, but I think they're shared. But this is what's significant to me because it's in the Huffington Post. Arianna Huffington was this darling of the right. She was an anti-women's libber. Here's a quote from her book, 1973 book, Women's Lib claims that the achievement of total liberation would transform the lives of all women for the better. The truth is that it would transform only the lives of women with strong lesbian tendencies. That's what she wrote in 70, 73, something like that.
Okay, well, that was kind of a long time ago, Steve.
Okay, but clearly she's been forgiven from that and has been able to move on. She's sort of an example that proves the argument wrong. That's my point.
Okay, well, we could go into many more men going back to Hamilton. I mean, come on. The entire theme of the play that has now captured the hearts and minds of Americans is that he wasn't loyal. He wasn't faithful, and yet he's a hero.
He's a hero, right. Okay, but I don't want to get too much into the weeds of this particular article because not everyone's read it, obviously. But the author of the article says, but even after his untimely death, it is because of Elizabeth Hamilton, his wife, that we know anything about him in the first place. Really?
Right. Which is true, but that only came to light after many, many, many years of celebrating him.
We wouldn't know that he was the first Secretary of the Treasury, or did he die?
Yeah, we'd know that fact, but we wouldn't know anything about his life.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, let's put the Huffington Post aside.
So are you banning? Are you going to be now like Trump, who sort of bans the media that he doesn't like? Are you banning me from bringing the Huff Post into this conversation?
No, because I do like the Huff Post, but I think also that they need sometimes someone to read what people post and say, this doesn't stand up to.
Okay, well, Steve, maybe you can be that first responder.
Could be. That could be. That's what I'll do during my time.
That's a good use of your time, man.
Let's talk a little bit about we talked about the Democrats there. President Obama strongly today said it's time for Republicans to unendorse or to walk away from Donald Trump when it comes to this sort of controversy or this standoff, I don't know what you'd call it, with the Kahn family.
Right.
And I don't know quite what to make of it. I mean, his biggest offense seems to be that he went after Mrs. Kahn for not speaking at the convention and implying that his religion, her religion, would keep her from speaking out. So I want to ask you, is this a women's issue, or is this a religious issue?
I think it's a human issue. I think people are struggling to find the humanity in what Trump is saying about this family who've lost their son. I mean, take all politics aside, Steve. Let's take it all off the table. You're talking about a husband and wife who sacrificed their son for the good of the country, and then you have Trump coming in and not only degrading them for their faith, but when you say about a woman, I mean, when you looked at her standing up there next to her husband, and she right. says this in her op-ed that she published in the Washington Post under her own head, you know, she wrote it, she signed it. She said, I was in pain. And anyone who watched me could see that. And I told my husband, I don't think I can speak. Any just having the image of her son behind her, and any of us who are parents, this is where I say it's about humanity, could relate to the feeling of, I'm not going to be able to do this. And so for him to insult her as a mother and then to couch that as, and maybe it's her religion that didn't allow her to speak, seems so very much below the bar that he's already so lowered that it's...
So will this one be different?
I think it is different. I think it's already different. You know, the question is, what Obama was calling on today was for the Republican leadership once and for all to say, you can't just keep saying that you don't agree with things he's saying as kind of one-offs week after week after week and not have that add up to a much more, you know, significant statement of, we can't endorse this guy.
It's hard to imagine a candidate taking on the mother of a dead U.S. soldier,
right?
And surviving it. It's just
it's pain. I mean, it's painful. When I see her, and when I see what she was, you know, to some extent forced to do in terms of defending herself, Steve, that's what got to me. You took a woman who's already been through so much and asked her now to have to defend her silence. Wow. I don't know how you get around that as a candidate. I don't.
Well, we'll see, because I think he's gotten around just about everything.
Exactly.
So,
right. How much lower? It's like a really good game of limbo.
Well,
how much lower can we go?
I want you to tell me about this movie Equity, that has, it's like The Wolf of Wall Street, but with women?
Yeah, it just came out on July 29th. I think it's one of these movies that I'm not going to suggest it's a great film that is going to rock the world, but the mere existence of the film is a good thing. So it's called Equity, and it really is a story of women, by women, for women. It was funded by a group of women investors, produced by two women. The majority of the cast is women, and it really shows a storyline that we don't typically see of women in that really aggressive financial leadership position.
Yeah, I think I've seen trailers for it. It looks like it's a pretty interesting movie.
I don't know how great it's going to be from a sort of artistic point of view, but it's one of these movies I think we can say, well, that hasn't yet been done. So that's a good thing.
But only because I'm always a big baby and bring up the other side of it.
Go ahead.
There's an article in the New York Times about it.
Uh-huh.
And one of the producers, Ms. Thomas, I'm sorry, I don't have her first name.
Yeah, Sarah Megan Thomas.
Sarah Megan Thomas. Yep. The quote is, the women in this movie made more money than the men as a whole.
Right. I saw that, too, and I flagged it. Here's how I interpreted it, but you and I interpret things differently sometimes. Sometimes.
Yeah.
I thought that she meant because they had bigger roles, that overall, if you actually took a tally of how much women were paid versus men, I don't think it was for equal parts. Now, I may be saying that out of my own bias. I admit that. But that was my read on that.
You're probably right. I hope you're right.
Let's rewind that tape. Did you just say, I think you're right?
No, I said you're probably right.
Okay,
this
just
is close. I do hope you're right, because that would just be a stupid thing for someone to say.
Right. That would, in my mind, almost tank the entire message they're trying to get out.
That's Suzanne Muschen, co-host of The Big Payoff. You should listen to it at WGNplus.com. I did.
I'm so glad, Steve. That means a lot.
We're back after this on WGN. Much Orion Samuelson, Kim Gordon, and Jill Egan, Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's a Tuesday afternoon on 720 WGN. How much do you spend on your pet each year? If you add us all up, we spend about $60 billion a year on our pets. That's just in the United States, $60 billion. Now, when it comes to insurance, we spend $700 million. I think that is a lot of money. Rusty Sproat wants to make it more. He is the CEO of Figo Pet Insurance, and he joins us now on the Business Lunch. Rusty, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, so tell me about why I have a Portuguese water dog. She's 12, 13 years old. Tell me about why I need pet insurance for her.
So pet insurance covers a lot of things that people don't realize. Our programs cover accident and illness. With the medical advances today in veterinary care, there's really nothing that a vet specialty hospital can't do for your pet that they're not doing, that human health care isn't doing. Radiology, cancer, MRIs, hydrotherapy, acupuncture, prosthetics, hip replacement. You name it, today those procedures can be done, and pets are our family members now, and people aren't euthanizing their pets like they were 10 or 15 years ago. They're keeping their pets alive, and medical care is expensive, so insurance is a great way to have peace of mind today for your pets.
You know, it's interesting to me, we broadcast the show from the Allstate studio on Michigan Avenue, WGN. Had a commercial earlier today about how they're looking for agency owners, and you started through Allstate, right? You were an agency owner and then moved into this company.
Yeah, I was. A partner and myself had purchased three Allstate agencies in the Chicagoland area back in 2010. And in 2012, someone from Allstate had actually walked into my office and said that she had just purchased pet insurance. So my head spun around, and I was just fascinated that I was an insurance agent at the time, and I had never even heard of pet insurance.
So, you know, and we do not have pet insurance. I know a lot of people do. I'm interested in this idea. I didn't know until I was just talking to Bill and Wendy before this program started that it actually is a benefit offered for people who work at Tribune Media. And that's really where the growth area is for you, isn't it? To sort of become one of these corporate benefits for, and the corporations like it because millennials like it.
Yeah, absolutely. So one out of every three Fortune 500 companies today offers pet insurance as a supplemental employee benefit. Much of it is passed on as a discount, but some employers are actually contributing to that. So it's very popular. We're rolling FIGO out in fourth quarter of this year with one of the top airlines in the U.S., and we're talking with an automaker. So the affinity channel, associations, employer and group spaces is really where we're looking to make an impact.
Sky's the limit. How big can you get?
So the market right now is about between $700 and $800 million, and less than 2% of pets in the U.S. are insured. So when we reach, and we will, about a 5% penetration, it'll be about a $4.5 billion wow. industry.
I can see why your head was spinning earlier, Rusty.
Yeah. Well, it was also spinning. The more you learn about pet insurance, the more you learn that, you know, it started in Sweden in 1923 where the first pet insurance policy was issued. And today, you know, 40% of pets, now they're saying close to 50% of pets in Sweden are insured. And then in 1947, the UK wrote its first pet insurance policy where today they have over 35% coverage. And it wasn't until 1981 when the Lassie became the first pet insured in America. Where today it's less than 2% of pets have insurance, but the number's changing, and it's changing rapidly. It's double-digit growth annually.
All right, so we've got just a few seconds left. Tell me about the highest-end insurance plan you have.
So we have an unlimited plan. So we will actually, you can go on our mobile app. We also came out of 1871 in Chicago, a Google tech hub. So we have two products. We have a pet cloud product with all sorts of great pet GPS devices and manage the entire life of your pet right from your mobile phone. And then we have the pet insurance product where we'll give you $10,000, $14,000 or unlimited annual medical benefits for your pet.
Beautiful. Rusty Sproat, the Figo Pet Insurance. Great to talk to you today. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.